Hi from the National Studios in Broadcasting House here in Accra. I am George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest update and detailed analysis of happenings in Ghana and beyond. Tonight, President Akufo-Addo promises to root out political vigilantism, accusing previous regimes of not doing enough about the problem, as police administration declares war on lawlessness. The religious teachings that discourage followers from seeking medical attention from health facilities. What are the health implications of such actions? We find out. And President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe sacks his vice. Is this an attempt to pave the way for his wife Grace to succeed him? We find out. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our show. Our text line is 0266-026-941. Behind the News, we are live on all our FM stations across the country and also live across the globe on www.gbcghana.com. To our very first story. President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo has indicted his predecessors for turning a blind eye to the activities of political vigilante groups. But he said he has assured Ghanaians of doing everything in his power to arrest the new phenomenon of vigilantism. The president said, and I quote, "I will not walk the other path through who found it convenient to turn a blind eye to the criminals' misdeeds of their followers and took no action, as it will displease them." He added that, "I am walking another path, the path of making reality the principle of the rule, the idea of equality of every citizen before the law. Wrongdoers wear no political colors. They are just wrongdoers and will be dealt with as such," unquote. The president said this when he met the National House of Chiefs in Kumasi today. Meanwhile, the Ghana Police Service had earlier declared war on lawlessness. This was contained in a communique issued after an emergency meeting of regional commanders and crime officers convened by the Inspector General of Police and the Police Management Board. The communique comes at a time pressure is being mounted on the police administration to deal with lawlessness being perpetrated by political vigilante groups in the country. So how different would the modus operandi of the police be this time around from what they have done in the past? We have been joined on the line by the Director General of Police Public Affairs, ACP David Eklu. Good evening, ACP, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George. Thank you very much.
And thanks for your time. What was the emergency meeting of the regional commanders and crime officers about?
It was basically to address topical policing issues in the country and then review our operations and see how we can enhance our operations to check lawlessness.
And is political vigilantism the major problem that the police are facing today?
There are other issues that we are facing, robbery, blackguardism, but political vigilantism stands very tall when it comes to the threats that we are facing in this country.
So what do you mean in your communique when you say that political victimization should not be an excuse in dealing with youth hooliganism and vigilantism, and that commanders will act proactively to confront the issue without fear or favor?
Yes, that emergency command conference that was convened by the Inspector General was attended by all regional commanders, as well as members of the Police Management Board. That's the highest decision body of the police service. And issues were discussed. Experiences were shared. Best practices were also discussed. And those that we can implement and should be implemented were identified. And one of the areas that we look at was political vigilantism. That has been a topical issue in the country for the past 2 weeks. And through our public opinion monitoring, we realize that we need to bring it on the forefront and devise pragmatic measures to check it. And one of the issues that came up was that across the board, this is not a new phenomenon, it has been there it has been with us all over the years, spanning several regions. And one of the issues that came up was this self-inflicted fear by some of the commanders, that if I take steps, I might be victimized. If I take steps, I might be sacked. And what came out and repeated by the press, His Excellency the President, is that there is a path that we need to follow. There's somebody who has come to clear the air. His Excellency the President has come to clear the air, that police deal with them. So it came out that this fear that some commanders have, or a lot of the commanders have, is non-existent. It has no basis and should not hinder our professionalism, especially as we have bought into the vision to become a world-class police.
Well, it reminds me of a popular saying that a man dies when he doesn't know the cause of his ailment. But the police will be able to work effectively if you know where these people operate. I mean, where they are, their groupings, and so on and so forth. But do you have such information, who they are?
Yes. Commanders know the existence of such groups across all the regions. There are certain regions where they are very dormant, certain regions where they are very active. So the commanders are aware.
So what should we expect? What should we expect from the police with this declaration of war on lawlessness?
The expectation from the police is that we are going to be more proactive, we are going to be pragmatic, and we are going to communicate actions that we have taken to the public. And commanders will also have to exercise their responsibility as commanders and give reports of actions that they have taken if such instances happen within their jurisdiction.
We have had instances in the past where youth groups have attacked police installments, sometimes vandalizing properties belonging to the state. And what comes to mind is whether the police have the numbers and logistics to meet them boot for boot.
It's not a question of numbers, logistics for now. These are misdemeanors or they are minor crimes. We have been able to chalk successes in terms of robbery and other violence. We have been able to effectively maintain law and order during the election. And that was a major national issue. So the question of logistics, the question of, because the procedure is simple. If the person commits the offense, if he is about to commit the offense and the police get information, what you have to do is to prevent that. And if they are unable, they identify the person, arrest, and send the person to court. And I don't think this requires too much logistics from us. Even though we need the logistics to be able to perform, I think these are issues that within our present state, we will not say that we are unable to do it because of logistics. Even though logistics might be a challenge, but it should not be an excuse for handling these issues as I speak.
ACP, we've heard the police in the past. In fact, the last time we had the police in the studio, we were told that political vigilantism had been deemed disbanded in the country. And that was prior to the election. Today, we are hearing another assurance. How different will you be this time around from what you've done in the past?
The fact is that when we say they are disbanded, it means that they have no legal authority.
Okay.
There's a state group known as A, B, C, D. But people can are free, they can assume certain names, but if they break the law, they'll be dealt with. That's what we mean. So we have not recognized any group as A, B, C, D. So, and if they are arrested, like if you take the Karaga case or the Gulu case, they were dealt with as individuals. And charges were preferred against them as individuals. And if there was an abetment, two or three people came together to commit offense, that one too can be dealt with. But the charges are individual. So that's how we are dealing with it.
The police administration is a disciplined one, and hierarchy is very, very respected in the service. Per the structure of our laws, the District Security Council is headed by the District Chief Executive. The Regional Security Council is headed by the Regional Minister. And so if you want to act and a certain regional minister feels that that decision will make the party or a party unpopular and wants to stop it, how will you go about that?
If His Excellency the President has said, deal with them as a law requires. I don't think any other person has any other authority beyond what the President has. And the role of the DISEC and then the RESEC is to provide early warning to the national security system. The other agencies that serve under DISEC advise the head or the chairperson. And these are professionals and experts in their own field. And supposed to ask them. So I don't think any RESEC or any RESEC will be comfortable in having some of these lawless activities within the jurisdiction and still functioning as respect chairman. I have not had any experience of any respect chairman saying that these are my party members, so don't act. And I think the president's directive, reinforced by the minister and the IGP, are very clear. And this should not be an excuse.
ACP, what should you expect from the general public to make this exercise a success?
Yes, one of the challenges that the commanders identified was people are not willing to provide information. In most of these cases, especially in Tamale and other places, they occurred at the blunt side of the police. Public institutions' offices were locked before the police gets in. And then when the police arrived, nobody is prepared to come and say, I saw A, B, C, D doing this act. Those are the challenges that we have. So if people would want us to act, it is a form of partnership. We need support from the public to let us have a very vigilant public. Let us have a public, because when they look up a state institution or a government office, it affects everybody. And it shows the extent to which they can go. So let us all work together to stop this and leave this in the bud. Let the public give us information and we work.
Right. ACP, want to thank you very much for your time. But giving you information, let me give you a gist of one. There's this increasing phenomenon of individuals who use V8 on our road. They toot their horns, intimidate people. Every other person must give them way because they have V8 and they are in dark sheet. I'm sure you'll be watching that as well.
Some action have been taken. Arrests have been made. And some of these unlawful blue lights. You know, the blue lights, the blue, red, and white, belongs to the police.
Yes.
And have a list of individuals or state institutions that are authorized to use it. His Excellency the President, the police, the ambulance services, and all that. And some arrests have been made by the central MTTD. What we also do is that very soon we are coming out with cameras to expose those who are doing this.
Right. So for the general public, if we see such, we can call your 18555.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right.
That's an infraction you can report.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News tonight. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
ACP David Eklu is the Director General of Police Public Affairs. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is Security Analyst Emmanuel Suwate. Good evening, sir. Welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George. It's a pleasure having me on your program.
Same to you, having you as well. So far, have you been satisfied with the way the issue of party vigilante groups have been handled by our security agencies?
And our politicians. But before I come to that, you raised the last issue you raised about the 4x4.
Yes.
Yes, one way of breaking traffic regulations in Ghana is to get a 4x4. And then have a tinted glass and then put on your double hazard. I see that time and again. And so when the IGP said they're going to clamp down on that, we are following that closely. Because you see, in Nigeria, I worked in Nigeria with the UN for some time. There was a time that in the fight against Boko Haram, the police were struggling to control tinted glasses because the culture had taken roots. And there are so many ogas in Nigeria. And so they instituted a particular operation known as Operation Velvet. Operation Velvet was directed primarily to make sure that unauthorized people using tinted glasses were stopped. And they couldn't succeed because it had taken so much root. Why did Operation Velvet come up? Because Boko Haram was using, at that time, I'm talking about 3-4 years ago, they were using the best 4x4s to convey explosives, their personnel, and then their arms and ammunition. And then when they want to use suicide bombing, there are two types. They are vehicle-borne and then they are human-borne. The vehicle-borne are explosives that are packed into cars. And then the human-borne IEDs are the ones they wear on human beings. And then sometimes they put on Keke Napep, that is the tricycles. The challenge was that when they move the ammunition, when they move the weapons, when they move the explosives, they use the plush cars, tinted. But when they are going to detonate, they use cars, second-hand cars, because the 4x4 is a way of passing through barriers and accessing places that generally you'll be stopped. And so it is up to us to make sure that we stop this culture, because when it takes root, it's referring to everybody using all sorts of tinted glasses and all sorts of siren. When it takes root, we don't know the consequences later. It's always good to be proactive. Now, the prime question about this political vigilantism. When you read the historical annals, let's take one book, Dennis Austin's Politics in Ghana. Realize that the 1956 elections had a lot of semblance of political vigilantism because the contestation was cheap and things were at stake. It has evolved over the years. Now, David Ekulu ACP said something very profound, that they reviewed the processes and added that some of the commanders were concerned about political victimization, and it is real. Now, political victimization doesn't necessarily, or interference doesn't necessarily come from only the president. It goes down to even, it can be constituency chairman or branch chairman who is harassing a police station officer in charge, or a district officer or divisional officer. So it comes down or percolates down from the top. What we know generally is that there's something called duplicitous. Politicians cannot be trusted. Necessarily, not all of them, but generally, when a politician says something in public, it doesn't necessarily mean that he means that in the bedroom or he means that in the boardroom, because politicians are adapt to the audience they want to address and the impact, short and long term impact. So a politician can easily come and say that, oh, I am not part of what is going on, but behind the scenes, when the cameras close up, they manipulate systems. So we hope that at least when people have integrity, what they say outwardly is what they mean. Because if those assurances are not there, the president, the regional minister, the district chief executive, party executive can say that you will not interfere. But in reality, whether they would not, you know, will be quite pioneering adventure to monitor. The other thing ACP talks, which is very true, is that there are other competing security needs. I'm sure you forgot cybercrime and Fulani and all type of manners. But what the police is trying to do, which is good, is the psychological part. You see, in this day and age, people get afraid. People get assurances also based on the psychological strategy of the police and the security. So, for example, when people are afraid and they see more police on the road, of course, when it comes to community policing, the other things, you do not just stand in, but you interact with people. That gives certain level of assurance. And so I think that what the police also in part were trying to do was to show publicly that the particular issue of vigilantism is being taken serious and that they are doing something about it. Your question is right, that what is new that the police is going to do? We can judge them by the outcome in terms of, for example, in the next 6 months, next 1 year, what would happen. That is when we can judge them, not what they only say they will do. But the saying is also important. And then I have one more thing, and then you come in if you have questions.
Right.
You see, the president will have to address the barest minimum three constituencies. Pressure from his own party, pressure from opposition to his party, and the ordinary Ghanaians. Sometimes the way you address all these constituencies do not complement each other. Let me explain briefly. Those within your party would say that, okay, we struggled with you, we suffered with you. You want to keep that constituency because there are those who you think can guarantee votes or at least can influence your policy because you know they are lawyers. You don't want to unnecessarily undermine them. That one, yes, they might be angry with you, but you want to tell them that you are now a government. You have to follow the laws. But then how then do you follow the laws without necessarily ruffling feathers within your party? And I think that one good example which I can quickly bring to support my argument is the Delta case. You see that some of the people within his party will not be happy. But then ordinary people who are keen observers were also not happy because they think that the punishment or the charges were not the best that could elicit a lot of conviction in terms of yes. So on the one hand, you've given the impression that you are doing something, but then you are not too heavy-handed. The idea is that at least those who are within your rank and file, within your party, would know that you cannot take the law into your own hands, but at the same time, they will not punish as much as they can. And the ordinary people will say, okay, at least they've been prosecuted. We are not happy. Let's see what will happen next time. That is what we call the world of real politics and the world of best practice. The best practice is to prosecute them with the best charges, secure the severest conviction and sentences. But then the world of real politics or political visibility is telling you that be careful not to lose your constituencies. It's a very difficult balance to develop. It's not that easy.
The president indicted previous regimes, and that brings to mind the real politic part of the argument. And then it Austin's Politics in Ghana and others who have talked about similar ones have referred to these groups as crucial roles when it is time for elections. Sometimes they come to police ballot boxes for the parties. And so the parties see these groupings as very crucial for their quest to attain power. And some of them even sponsor these things. And so for a president to say, I will deal with it, is this something that is realistic, since he may not have control over what other opposition parties may be doing in terms of grooming these guys?
Okay, so a number of things you've put together. Let me try to unpack them. Okay, you've talked about the president, as the president, but also as a member of a particular political party. The president, quote and unquote, has the luxury to say that he's going to elicit compliance, he's going to be firm at this time. Because when we get to a political season, or when we get to the political season, I can promise you that his rhetoric will change, his rhetoric will be watered down substantially. You mark it on the wall. That is the world of political feasibility. Now, he has the luxury a little because of time. But when he gets there, so I'm saying that it's not only he eliciting compliance from the other major political parties, but even within his own party. The other thing you said, and which I want to unpack, is that you see, there are a lot of youth, and Ghana has a lot of youth. Our population is very youthful. There are a lot of youth within political parties who during election may not have money. They don't have strong political capital. They don't have strong network. But they have energy. They have passion. So you have a group of 100 people. Some are there because they think that, yes, they can put up banners. Some are there because they think that they can sing. Some are there because they think that they have to show support. The others who are there just because they think that they might get something for themselves when their party comes to power. So I don't want to say that all the youth who you see them parading as people who want to protect the interests of their party are vigilante. No. Sometimes they do it out of ignorance. And you can find them. Ignorance in terms of the consequences of their actions from the perspective of the law. In other words, they are breaching the law. Sometimes it's ignorance. It is true, but ignorance is no excuse. The others who are criminals. So what we want to do now is to say that, okay, the fantasy or the accounts have something to, that they say, a proverb. Say, bibi and kam papa, in papa and jikrede. In other words, in as much as, yes, you want to prosecute and hold these youth accountable, we should also ask, what are some of the underlying factors? Sometimes it is born out of broken promises. Sometimes it's because some of those who are well connected now gave them promises, gave them assurances. They were people who the youth could access midnight. They were people these top guys, the big shots, could call them. And these guys left everything they could and supported the politician. But now that they want to call the politician, now that they want to have access, the bridges are broken, not all the caves. Sometimes, too, they don't have the promises that were given to them. So I'm saying that in finding lasting solutions, let's sometimes give some of these boys the listening opportunity. Let's give the voiceless a voice to explain, no matter how ridiculous it might sound. There are rational explanation in every seemingly foolish thing. We're able to get some of their pain and their grievance. Sometimes you realize that even from the party's perspective, just picking a call and explaining that, yes, we thought we could do 1, 2, 3, but give us some time. Or just telling them that, you know, give us some time to do 1, 2, 3. Or telling them that I'm sorry. Or just picking the call and listening to them. Sometimes might reduce the grievance and the pain. And the other side, when you get this picture, you will then advise potential politicians, young and old, that be circumspect and moderate in your promises.
Okay.
Be circumspect in the extent to which you say that state institutions cannot be trusted. Because, you see, that is what I'm concluding. When you give the impression that state institutions, when you are close to power, everything about state institution, the security is 100% no fault. But sometimes you need constructive criticism to develop institutions. On the other hand, when you are in opposition, you say you cannot trust state institutions. So these youth should protect you. So in their mind, you can only get what you want when you go through the extra-legal perspective. And then when the ogres get power, the same institutions they said you can't trust are now using them to exert influence over the youth. So lasting solution lies in all of the actors knowing that Ghana first,
okay,
and making sure that we give state institutions the support by criticizing them constructively, and where they do the right thing, we support them. But it cuts across political parties,
right,
and it will take time.
But somebody says that people make change. Politicians will make the speeches that sound good. But here we are, the people who are supposed to make the change feel unsafe, at least for now. What should be their role?
And please, what sort of insecurity are you talking about? Electoral insecurity?
No, I'm talking of political vigilantism.
Okay. So that is where the psychological part comes in. Because you see, if we take the police crime statistics from January to now, and we look at the type of crime, there are different gradations. You see, some are homicide, some are armed robbery, some are this Fulani, some are this electoral related issues. When you put all together, you realize that this vigilante might be maybe 10% in terms of the statistics that have been reported with the police. But because people and the media takes it, and we all discuss it time and again, it takes a particular national dimension. And that is where the psychological part comes in. So the psychological part of assurance is there. And the other part is that politicians are rational beings. When they know that ordinary people will vote against them, whether MP, whether president, whether assemblyman, when they know that ordinary people will vote against them, when they are even perceived to be associated with vigilante, political vigilante, they will stop. It is not unique to Ghana. Barack Obama changed his church because he thought the pastor had said something that was inimical to his political prospect, and he left. So it is up to us, ordinary people. Lastly, I want to conclude on this thing. I saw Daily Graphic, and I think it's a major national security issue. Daily Graphic of today. 241 school children had died from January to September.
Sure.
241. I think that this should be on the front burner of discussion, because these are potential human resources. The most vital national security asset of every country is the human resource, not the galamsey that we are fighting. Human resource.
Thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful, sir. Emmanuel Suwate is a security analyst. He's behind the news. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line the executive director of the Ghana Institute of Governance and Security, David Agbuye. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, George.
Well, you have issued statement from your institute, time without number, on the activities of vigilante groups. Today, we hear the police have declared war, that was over the weekend, on lawlessness. And the president has reinforced that by stating or reinforcing or retreating his commitment to ensure that these groups are rooted out of our system.
Yes, George, I must say that what you catalog is actually the case, because 2016, we saw the threat, coming. And so we embarked on massive education, which we were able to organize more than 100 of these vigilante groups and teach them very well to be citizens of this country. And so we've done a lot as far as these vigilante groups are concerned. But the reality of the day is that our politicians do not understand the gravity of these vigilante groups and the threat that they pose to this country. And in fact, reading through the statement issued from the office of the president, one thing came into mind, that really many people, including some of the ministers or the speech writers, do not really understand the current system of governance the current system of democracy across the world. And so they write English without understanding its implications. When somebody says that, vigilante groups here and there and other people have, turned a blind eye to it. And George, as a political scientist and security analyst, if I'm writing a report, a political report of this country, right from January or December up to now, George, it will be very difficult for me to write a very good report about our country because I understand the gravity of these vigilante groups. And I know the threat that this group of people pose, to our country. And so if we are in this country and a vigilante group to the extent that they've gone to court and attack court, attack the judge, pack everything away, George, I've never read it anywhere. Right from the onset that the issue, broke. I was trying to read some dictionaries, some literature from elsewhere. I couldn't find any literature to be able to back my analysis. And I realized that, no, we need to find a way of handling these vigilante groups. We can never turn into a state of nature where there is no law, when there is no regulations, and so forth. Anybody does whatever he thinks is right. These vigilante groups are a serious group that people have sponsored them to do the unthinkable. Do not forget that we were in this country that 2016, some group of Ghanaians were able to bring people, expats from South Africa, to come and train people in our country here in Central Region, trying to galvanize all these people, mobilize all of them, give them weapons, give them all kinds of accoutrements. And here we are now dealing with these vigilante groups. Those group of people who armed them, who gave them ammunition, who gave them all the training skills, they are nowhere to be found as we speak. So, George, we are not dealing with a small problem. People could write good English. People could learn vandalism and write good English here and there. But some of us have learned what governance is all about across the world. Some of us have been taught theoretically and practically to understand the governance architecture of the world system.
All right.
And
but,
so when we are dealing with some of these vigilante groups and people write statements for writing's sake, I think that we need to call a spade a spade. These people are not vigilante groups. They are simply criminals that we are joking with. And so we should treat them as criminals enough so that the state authority, the security agencies will wake up to their calls and be able to arrest these people and treat them like criminals.
Well, but sir, if they are criminals, they are Ghanaians. Is it not possible that they may have genuine grievances?
George, if you have grievances, if you have whatever it takes that you want people to resolve for you, it is not about attacking court systems. It is not about attacking, personalities. It is not about destroying public property. We all have grievances. We have a way of sharing our grievances. But I do not support that this grievance is about the fact that people will go to court and attack a judge and attack a court. And when the matter goes to court, the judicial system manipulate the system, change all the accusations from assault.
Well, but for the records, the judicial didn't change anything. It was the prosecution that amended their statement, and so the judiciary will only have to act based on what was brought before them.
I do not think that with my basic element of law and my basic architecture of how the world system is regulated, I do not think that these prosecutors will change their earlier funding. It was the fact that a group of people manipulated the judicial system and changed all the accusations that the prosecutors initially indicated. So I think that we are lowering the standard of what governance is all about. And so I think that the president and the writers of the speeches of the president and all that, they need to be extra careful and know the sign of the moment and understand where, you know, the world system has actually gotten to, but not to write English for us. And I think that this is a very serious matter. We should find an antidote for it rather than trying to gloss over it. And once upon a time, this group of people will come and hunt all of us.
All right.
And I'm afraid of my life, of late, that no, if we should allow these people to manipulate through the system, you know, attack a court, even when the matter goes to the judiciary, people can manipulate the system. George, I'm afraid of my life.
All right.
So I think that we should be able to deal with this matter seriously as Ghanaians. So
very grateful.
We can save our freedom.
Very grateful for your time on our show. Thank you very much. David Agui is the Executive Director of the Ghana Institute of Governance and Security. Some of your text messages. Jabal Maxwell from Wulinse says, Mahama did better, but Ghanaians still voted him out. May God bless Mahama. African leaders should not be power drunk. This is coming from Jake Annes in Kaliu, Upper West Region. Cheekbag says, unfortunately, once you live in the glass house, you do not throw stones. Inshallah, President Akufo-Addo will deliver all his promises. Raphael Kuma Imbole Bamboy said, vigilantism did not start today, hence should not be seen as a political problem, rather a national security issue. We should stop the blame game and work together as a country to bring the menace to an end. Ajambori Baba in Wiamwase says, in which regime did vigilante groups attack the judiciary? It has never happened in Ghana. President Akufo-Addo and the New Patriotic Party should be concerned with security and stop the campaign messages. And moving on to other stories. The increasing number of television channels and radio stations have further exacerbated the disturbing phenomenon of some pastors who encourage the sick to resort to prayer camps, use anointing oil or water, banners and stickers of pastors instead as a way of receiving healings. There have been instances where sick people, including pregnant women, have been visibly abused in the name of deliverance and healing in these prayer camps and sometimes well-organized churches. So what could be the implications of this, and why should we not visit the health facility and resort to prayer camps first? We have been joined on the line by Dr. Daniel Ebo. He is the medical director, Solis Medical Center at La here in Accra. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George, and good evening to your unique listeners.
Doc, is it the normal thing that every sickness should be reported to a health facility?
As a doctor, I would say it's not something that is exclusive. But as a medical practitioner as well, I think once you have anything that is medically related, it's just right that you visit the hospital.
Has the hospital got solutions to medical problems?
Yes,
exclusively?
Yes. We've had a lot of advances in various fields in medicine, and the interventions are there. So I would say majority of medical conditions have interventions that are tailored towards getting treatments for them. So those that are medically related, why not? We are well armed as medical practitioners to take care of that.
Are there implications if somebody decides to visit a prayer camp, a juju shrine, or anywhere, and when the conditions get worse, they come to a health facility?
Mr. George, the implications are very grave. And as a practitioner, what even makes it more harrowing is the sense that I've had replete instances where people had conditions which, if they had come to the medical facility at an earlier time, they would have had treatment, but they go to all kinds of places, shrines and prayer camps, and by the time they get to the hospital, it's a complicated situation. And when it gets to such situations, we are on a very short leash as to what to do to be able to help those patients. Yeah.
In the special case of pregnant women and children in, why should they not resort to prayer camps as first resort before the health facilities?
For pregnant women, they are a very high risk group of patients because of the conditions that are inherent in pregnancy. One example is what we call pregnancy-induced hypertension. If a pregnant woman has that condition and starts exhibiting, let's say, seizures, and you think going to a prayer camp is what might help that pregnant woman, then you may end up losing the patient. Because such a condition is one that requires urgent, I mean urgent, medical attention. And really dallying with any other intervention that doesn't seek to go to the core of that condition will only lead to you getting the patient dead. So for pregnant women, because of the high risk nature of their condition, I will personally advise any pregnant woman who has any medical condition to visit the hospital first before even thinking of calling the pastor.
Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to watch television, and scanning through the channels, I noticed lots of these pastors. There's one based in Kumasi, for instance, who says he is his facility is the last resort for what he called appetitis, and he was actually referring to hepatitis. And he will put something that looks yellowish in a glass container and give it to people to drink. Are there implications if patients of, say, hepatitis, and he will call it appetitis, should be drinking those concoctions?
For the implications, George, I'm not. I don't think I'm the best voice to tell whether there are implications or not. But that will also depend on what those concoctions contain, as you know. A condition like hepatitis is a chronic condition. Even in the medical field, we are still struggling to treat it. What we actually do is to manage it. It's just very similar to HIV, where we try to reduce the viral load, the amount of virus in somebody's body, to a very minimal level so that it doesn't cause much damage to the liver and then other organs. So even in the medical field, where we have better arsenal and armamentarium, we struggle it. But fate can sometimes work. But to just say you have something in a bottle and that will be able to cure somebody, I think it will require a very huge amount of faith to believe that for it to work.
What would be your advice to Christians who believe in the faith healing and the medical healing?
I believe as a medical practitioner, God has ways of curing people. God can decide to cure somebody through faith, and he can also decide to cure somebody through the medical route. And I also think that God, in his infinite wisdom, gave us brains as human beings sometimes to give him rest. But it's just unfortunate that sometimes in this part of the world, we don't give God rest at all. Even when thunder strikes, because we don't put lightning devices that will help F our houses, we start praying. We don't really prepare for anything natural. So any little thing, we run to Papa God to pray. But if we really try to explore the intelligence that God has given us, then we will be able to use our intelligence to solve most of the problems we have. And that intelligence is what God has also blessed medical practitioners with. We've done a lot of explorative medicine, and the interventions we are doing are very good. And in order not to sound agnostic, I would say that pastors and doctors should see each other as team players. No pastor should tell the patient that the first point of call when the fellow has a medical condition is the church house. We should see each other as a team that is trying to leverage our unique abilities and intelligence to help the patient. Because the human being is made of the body, the spirit, the soul, and then the emotions. They also have a part to play. I would not advise patients to go there first. The pastor should rather come to the hospital and also pray for the patients, and not the other way around. That would be a better way of we leveraging our abilities together and making sure that holistically we try and then get the best for our patients.
Right. Doc, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight.
Thank you, George. And thanks for having me.
Dr. Ebu Daniels is the medical director of Solis Medical Center here in Accra. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line the senior pastor with the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, Trinity Parish, Madina, Reverend Godwin Kweku Osiakwa. Good evening, man of God, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Papa George.
Well, the doctor just made something that keeps me uneasy. We don't allow Papa God to rest. It's prayer here and there, all night here and there, and so on and so forth. But from the biblical point of view, what is the position of Christianity when it comes to healing?
Thank you, George, for the opportunity. When it comes to healing for the Christian, we see healing as holistic. God that we worship is love, and God is willing and able to heal. So we believe healing, all healing, comes from God. In the first place, God didn't create sickness. Sickness and death entered the world through the fall of man. So when it comes to sickness, we look at the composition of man. That is, man is made of body, mind, and spirit.
Okay.
Body, mind, emotions, therefore the psyche or the soul, and then spirit. So all this to put in totality. So it means it has a spiritual aspect, and then it has the medical aspect as well. And the two must work together to bring about holistic healing for the individual who is sick. That is the Christian position. So it is two-sided.
Well, I don't know much in the past. Yes. And the Evangelical Presbyterian Church is over 100 years. I mean, since it's you know, inception in the country. But in the past, we had churches that were not into some of these things. Today, you tune to any television channel, especially in the night, and they have all sort of concoctions given to patients, take this, sometimes banners, sometimes anointing oil. And it's like that is the headquarters of healings. I'm wondering, is that a position of your church as well?
No, I don't. It is not within the church. Because we believe Christ Jesus has given us a mandate. And this mandate includes the healing ministry,
okay,
as well as the teaching ministry, and then the sacramental aspect of it.
Healing ministry is where we are interested. And in your parish, I understand you are about 50 years now. How do you do your healing ministry?
Our healing ministry, what we do is we focus on prayers and involve our parishioners in prayers and deliverance. But when we see that there is an ailment, we advise the member to first go for a medical checkup.
So but is it the duty of the church, for instance, to be engaging in, say, medical screening, as you people do?
Sure. Even within this period, when we are celebrating our 50th anniversary, we involved that. We added many medical screening and even health work. So majority of our membership went through this medical screening, and it was found very helpful to us, because before then, most of them didn't know their medical position, their health position. We were sick. Most of us were sick going about. So it has been a very great help to us, knowing how to go about our diet and then exercising and other things that we can do to make our lives better, healthier. So it has helped our people so much. We have a health screening just last Saturday. Majority of our members were there, and it was fun and so helpful when we had that in the Atraku campus. It was a joy for all of us.
So what will you tell fellow Christians, your parish 50 years and moving forward, when it comes to health issues?
I will admonish them not to go to pastors who want to keep them in the form of enslavement, but to actually take our teachings on all that we give regarding healing. We advise them first to go to the medical hospitals for their treatment, and then we visit. We visit. When we are informed about all this, we visit them and give them the spiritual aspect of healing to make their healing holistic. So in this time of our 50th anniversary celebration, we are admonishing our membership to actually take to health screening and frequent checkups, medical checkups, to know their positions. It has already been started for them, and then from time to time, we will beckon the medical practitioners to come to our premises to continue the exercise for us.
All right.
When they come, we want to admonish our members to come over and have their screening done for them.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. I'm very grateful, sir, and wish you all the best in your celebrations.
Thank you very much.
Reverend Godwin Kweku Osiakwa is the district pastor of the EP Trinity Parish at Madina, and also the immediate past clerk of the General Assembly of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, Ghana. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. And moving on to other stories, the Vice President of Zimbabwe has been sacked by President Robert Mugabe. Vice President Mnangagwa is alleged to have displayed traits of disloyalty, which is inconsistent with the responsibilities of a vice president. He was a former intelligence chief and is one of the leading candidates interested in the presidency of Zimbabwe. His dismissal seems to brighten the chances of the First Lady Grace Mugabe, who is also tipped as one to succeed President Robert Mugabe. Behind the News examines the implications of the dismissal and the signal it sends across the sub-region. We have been joined on the line by Ben Arthur, is a conflict and security expert. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, George.
Vice President of Zimbabwe has been dismissed, and many are already reading meanings into his interest in the presidency. And looking at what is happening in Togo, people revolting against the president because they think it's becoming a dynasty. Is this a clear chance of Grace Mugabe probably taking over from her husband?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I couldn't get the last.
I'm asking whether the dismissal of the vice president is guaranteed that Grace Mugabe will be the next president of Zimbabwe.
Yeah, definitely. But let me take this opportunity and greet all your cherished listeners. In fact, that act or that action by President Mugabe is basically a preparatory work to pave way for the wife to probably take over. You know, the wife has criticized the vice president for quite a number of times, and internal party politics in their own party shows that if Mugabe were dead, possibly the vice president who would take over. And the vice president has also positioned himself very well to make sure that in the likely event that President Mugabe is not running or does not exist anymore, then he is, you know, positioned very well to take over. So the wife has also seen that, look, I cannot just simply sit for this gentleman to take over, and I could possibly foresee putting so much pressure on President Mugabe to take this action. But it's something that is, I'm sure, is going to lead to a very big division in their party. Because for so many years, President Mugabe has been in charge. And I know, as per the voting pattern, that his people here for exchange. So if the change is going to come by the exiting of Mugabe, then they will be very happy. But if we're going to have another Mugabe come take over from the husband, it is likely that they may only have to perpetuate the dictatorship. But if there is a true transparent and credible election, it might not go too well for the Mugabe. So basically, it's more or less an internal affair, but it has connotation for all of us in Africa, whether we want to entrench democracy in our country or not. But I must be quick in adding that I am sorry for President Mugabe and I'm sorry for the wife, because you will not be able to predict precisely the kind of reactions that will come. But there's one thing that all of us can predict, that it can lead to violence.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Wish we had enough time to delve more, but unfortunately our time is running out. Ben Arthur is the conflict and security expert. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, and also joining us on the line is Fidel Amachi Wusu. He's an international relations analyst. Good evening, Fidel, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George.
President Mugabe has made it clear that he's going to run for elections next year. So sacking the vice president, is it in any way, or can it in any way be linked to the interest shown by Grace Mugabe?
Well, George, this is one of the usual things that happen on the continent. George, one thing that we must look is that this has been placed behind loyalty. That loyalty is the reason why, or because of the disloyalty of the vice president, he's supposed to leave the team. But the fact of the matter is that the same man has been with Mugabe for over 40 years, first as his special assistant, and then he became his security chief. And, George, you don't pick just anybody to be your security chief. You definitely pick a loyal person to be your security chief. Then you promote such a person to vice president after sacking the previous one 3 years ago. So the whole thing has nothing to do with loyalty, but it has to do with a power struggle. And this power struggle stems from the senile nature of the president, that's Mugabe. He's too old and he's weak. And now he has become more vulnerable to the manipulations of the wife. So the wife wants to just get rid of this vice president so that they take over. Because as of now, I doubt if President Mugabe really understands what is going on around him. That's what I see.
Shouldn't we be happy if Grace becomes the president? At least she'll be the second female president on the continent. That'll be good for women in politics.
Becoming a second female president is good. But, George, are we going to say the end will justify the means? No. In Zimbabwe now, the means will also be very necessary. How are you going to take over? That you have an old husband who is so powerful that his people around him have, you know, the inner circle do not want anybody to get in. And as my colleague said, the vice president has currently positioned himself. And, George, you should understand, over 90-year-old president in the scene, people would definitely surround themselves around the vice president. So Grace is seeing the vice president to be too powerful. And so by getting rid of him, she will just step in. And if you step in through that means, people are not going to see you to be that legitimate. And we might see a repeat of what happened previously that brought about a power-sharing agreement between Tsvangirai and Mugabe.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful. Fidel Amachi Owusu is an international relations analyst. It's Behind the News, and some of your text messages. This one says, Ghana should be very careful about political vigilantism and the phenomenon of body langas. They will metamorphosize into terrorist groups in the future. We wait till things get out of hand before taking action. I think metamorphosis. Okay, that's the correct word. Jonas Odame in Dakuman, Accra, sent in that one. This one says, God save Ghana. Francis in Abeling sent in that one. Good evening, George. President Akufo-Addo has completely lost the fight against vigilantism already. Efu Kwesi sent in this from who? Monica Kons in Navrongo says, vigilante groups should not be allowed in the country as they could end up becoming terrorist groups. And the House Party in Kipku says, please, did I hear you say that President Akufo-Addo has accused former regimes of not doing enough to tackle vigilante groups? Please tell President Akufo-Addo to tackle vigilante groups and stop the blame game. And this is how we end tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers have been set here, Belant Elom Tete and John Akampale. Gifty Broom was our sound engineer, and I'm George. I say creatively, meet again, same time tomorrow, God willing. Enjoy the rest of our programs.